Hello, and welcome back to the Inside Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Mesritz. Well, I cannot believe it. We have made it to the end of the first season of the Inside Community Podcast, and I think we've covered a lot of ground. I've really tried in this season to lay a bit of a foundational framework for what intentional community is, how it works, and really give some basics of collaborative culture to support you and your journey wherever it is that you are, whether this is the first time that you're thinking about community or you're a seasoned communitarian. For this final episode, however, I'm doing something just a little bit different. Today, we are going to do more of a panel discussion. You might remember my guest, Sky Blue, from episode 8. They came on to talk to me about income sharing and innovating economy. Well, they reached out to me with an idea to capture a conversation they've been active in with fellow community experts Cassandra Ferreira and Jana Ludwig, who was my guest for episode 4 on finding co-founders. These three are friends, and they've all been connected to the board of the Foundation for Intentional Community, and they are all really passionate advocates for community and what it has the potential of being. And so their idea was to really have a conversation about the state of the communities movement. I found this conversation extremely inspiring, and I hope that you will too. It really pushes into a little bit more of what I would like to call advanced community theory, as it begins to explore some of the hopes and the dreams and the challenges facing communities, both individually and as a larger movement. So I think there's a lot of really great takeaways in here that hopefully will inspire your journey and your growth edge as well. Today's guests are Sky Blue. Sky Blue spent 22 years living, working, and organizing in intentional communities, cooperatives, and community organizations. They are currently working with a group of people to start a new community and work as a community consultant as part of the Next Big Step. They take a whole systems approach to helping groups uncover and address underlying issues and dynamics, develop shared understanding, and find ways to move forward together. Jana Ludwig is a cooperative culture pioneer, intentional communities advocate, and anti-oppression activist. She serves on the Foundation for Intentional Community Board and is a trainer and consultant for communities, worker-owned cooperatives, and nonprofits. She is the author of Together Resilient, Building Community in the Age of Climate Disruption, the Cooperative Culture Handbook with Karen Gimnig, and the soon-to-be-released Building Belonging, Your Guide to Starting a Land-Based Intentional Community. And new to the show, today we have Cassandra Ferreira. Cassandra's dynamic real estate career and community activism has focused on the edge of cultural innovation where cooperation meets land stewardship. She has provided agency, complex contract design, consulting, and cooperative governance support to dozens of communities and land projects. A licensed real estate agent in California since 2003, Cassandra's license is with the progressive Green Key Real Estate Brokerage in the San Francisco Bay Area. She is currently co-founding the Center for Ethical Land Transition, a nonprofit organization that supports solidarity and justice in land transitions. So we're just going to jump right into this conversation. And the first voice that you're going to hear is that of Cassandra Ferreira. And she just had such a beautiful share and opening to our conversation. I wanted to share it with you, and I hope it warms your heart as it does mine.
I guess I want to just name that Jana and Sky and I have been, like, we love to talk with each other. Like, we're, and this is the first time that we've pressed record. And so I just kind of want to invoke the magic that just happens naturally when we're not, like, doing it for a podcast, you know, just to be friends who are just so sleeves rolled up in this together and have been for so many years and love each other deeply and respect each other. And yeah, so I love you both so much. Yeah, it's just so fun and delightful to get to be yeah, just to get to be in it together and then have hopefully something thoughtful and meaningful to say that might help others. So yeah, great.
Yeah.
Nice. Sames.
Yeah.
Well, here's to that. I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, Cassandra, for bringing that in. You know, I was going to ask you each in a way of sort of introducing yourselves to talk about what piece of the community world, community reality you feel like you're really holding, nurturing, guiding. So maybe we could start there. Cassandra, why don't you start? You already kind of got the ball rolling. You seem warmed up.
Sure. While I've been deep in the practice of just living it for the last 16 years, I've also been really focused on the land part of the process and the like the place-based nature of community. And I've been a real estate agent, not so much because I thought buying and selling real estate was a really good idea, but because I was guided into a place where I could help understand what was so distasteful about the way that our dominant culture deals with land. And so I wanted to get in there and understand why more people didn't have access to land and why it was so privatized, so that I could serve the cooperativization of land. And so it's really been a lot. Getting into that space means that I touch so many aspects of it, but it's I feel like it's really about that primary partnership with place and how land shapes us as human beings and kind of where we are in a larger cultural moment in restoring a healthy relationship with place.
Beautiful. Sky, you want to go next?
Sure. I've been in the intentional communities movement, for over 20 years now. And, you know, I certainly have this, I think, also interesting perspective, given that my parents were in it and that my parents met in it. And so, you know, I definitely am sort of a second generation intentional communities person. But these days, the sort of the different perspectives that I think I'm bringing are that I am working with a group of people to try to start a new intentional community. And I have been on that journey to some degree in the past, but kind of being in it again and being in it in a little bit more serious of a way than I think I've been in the past. You know, it's a very particular perspective, you know, that I to have on the intentional communities movement when trying to start one. Yeah. And just being in conversation and in touch with a lot of different people who are trying to start community. And so there's definitely some particular perspectives there. And then the other thing, which, you know, I think Yana and Cass have been in much more in the past than I have, is I've started doing more consulting with communities. And again, this sort of, there's a particular perspective that gives as well. And I think the consulting that I have kind of gotten into that I enjoy the most is when groups really let me look under the hood in a really deep way, which is where I think I work best. And so being able to have sort of the honor of being able to, and the trust that groups have been giving me of being able to just really see them deeply and reflect what I can, what that gives for me, what I'm able to give to them is also just a really powerful perspective.
Yana?
Yeah, I think that if I had to pick a niche, and I resist picking niches, but if I had to pick a niche, I would say it would definitely be a cooperative culture. And my work on that came out of initially living in community, starting like 26 years ago, and then starting to work with groups professionally about 10 years later, and just noticing all the different ways that we are dealing with sort of competing cultural paradigms in community, where people bring in a lot of different things into community, and then we try to do something cooperative. And you know, what happens and what are the patterns and sort of those meltdowns that happen. And increasingly, I've been combining that work with a power analysis that is about anti-oppression work, and particularly focused on racism and classism in community. And really, so seeing the ways that community is kind of a microcosm of much bigger, you know, cultural shift that I think we're in the midst of, and that there's varying degrees of resistance to both within the communities movement and outside of that movement. And really, you know, trying to do this dance between being the individual that I am, who is, you know, a white woman, cisgender, queer, and, you know, working class, and like, what does that mean? And, you know, what are the systems that I'm sort of actively in touch with that I can be a leverage point, either because I'm in a power position or because I'm not in a power position at different times. And I think the interplay of all of that stuff is the thing that probably interests me the most in community work, and, you know, and being able to like learn from people like Cassandra about like, well, what does that mean for land? And, you know, and like thinking about like all three of us have in common that we've raised kids in community, and like, what does that mean as a parent? Like there's a thousand ways that you can ask, what does that mean for? And it's all really fascinating and interesting to me, particularly when you add the anti-oppression part into it.
Hmm. While you are each holding such crucial keys, it seems, to this sort of overview of what community is. And I know you've all done a lot of work in these areas. And I, you know, I want to start this, obviously this podcast, this episode is really sort of a state of the union, if you will, a state of the communities movement. And from your vantage points, where do you see communities, the capital C, succeeding? You know, where are we strong? Where are we thriving? Where are we making headway and actually making progress?
I love that we're all quiet. We're like, I mean, I think the thing that we have in common is that we're really in touch with some of the more problematic things about the movement. And so when you say like, where are we succeeding and where are we thriving? I'm like, you know, I think that community changes your consciousness. I mean, I think that that is just a core belief about it. And the deeper you get into that kind of changing your consciousness thing, the more you see all the ways that we still need to change. So I think we should be crediting the movement with like, you know, there's been, I think, a lot of growth that like individuals have had, and then we've gone back in and we've learned how to do community better and more cooperative and resolve conflicts better and all that kind of stuff. And I think the most honest of practitioners and thinkers in the movement also are more and more aware of the ways that it's just an incredibly problematic space that we're operating in. So my guess is that was like at least part of that, like, that we all just did when you asked that question.
Well, yeah, I think I feel like, you know, the three of us are all people who like we deeply care about this stuff, and we believe in it in a very deep way, and we see the potential of it, and we very much want intentional communities to be able to manifest their full potential to impact the world that we see is possible. And so, of course, to some degree, we are going to be more focused on the problems, because we want to figure those out. We want to solve those. We want to get the barriers out of the way. But so I do really appreciate, though, that you're asking, like, where are we doing well? Because I think it's a good thing to stretch into that and really and acknowledge it, because like, we have to be able to see the barriers and deal with them if we want to move forward. But we have to recognize where we're doing well as well. And I think kind of like what Yana was saying with the microcosm thing, I think part of the challenge of seeing what is being done well is that so much of what intentional community is about is dealing with the problems of society. Like, we're taking all this this crap that we've got from society. We're trying to figure out different ways of dealing with it and being with it. And so of course it's going to be messy. And of course we're not really going to know what we're going to do. And of course it's challenging and it's going to look bad at times. But I think one of the things that the perspective that's important is that, you know, even if, you know, we're like, I think stuff around sharing, you know, the importance of sharing and sharing resources, sharing lives, and what that means in all sorts of different aspects, you know, cooperative governance, like Yana said, you know, conflict resolution stuff, even stuff around, you know, oppression, injustice, accessibility, equity, that sort of thing. Like, you know, there's a way in which you can look at it all in different communities and be like, well, we're not necessarily doing that well. Like, we haven't figured it all out. But like, on some level, it's like, well, that's not really the point. We're never going to figure it all out. And part of what I think is good about all of this is that we are at least trying to deal with things. We are at least willing to touch conversations that most people in most places are just not even willing to go there.
I think, you know, part of the reason I want to start there is, you know, I know that there's a lot of challenges and we're definitely going to get into those things. But I'm also aware, you know, when you first reach out to me, Sky, with this question of, you know, where are things and this desire to sort of share this conversation with people. One of the things that came up is how can we continue to garner interest in this movement and really spread this message out? And so I feel like in some ways, it's kind of a branding thing. Like, what, you know, how do we attract people to this lifestyle and this way of being if we only talk about, well, we could do this better, we could do this better, we could do this better. It's like, well, no, but if you want to live in this way, in this way, in this way, and rock, you know, rock out in permaculture, rock out in egalitarian values and these kind of things, communities is the place to do that. So that's kind of where I want to, like, I'd like to highlight that too, because I think it's so important that people know that actually communities is a wonderful place for X, Y, Z, and also A, B, and C, and then all the stuff in between. Yeah, we're working on.
I actually kind of want to get something from Cassandra, potentially, particularly around land. And I think one of the things that is happening that is good in the intentional communities movement is the shift in relationship to land, particularly in terms of the shift from seeing ourselves as owning property to seeing ourselves as belonging to land. And I want to get Cassandra to say more about that if she wants to.
I appreciate that, Sky. I do feel like strides are being made in the collective mind around cooperative stewardship. So what it means to live into land, so not just live on land, but live in and as land, listen to the land, be curious about what our relationship and responsibility is to the original stewards of the land, and to dream ourselves into new legal structures that we really need. I think there's innovation that is happening through the privilege of cooperative stewardship by folks who can put themselves to that work to help deeply think, feel, listen, be guided by the land and innovate, iterate how it is that our legal agreements reflect what it is our cultural values are, what's emerging in that cultural space. And like my two friends here, I think this goes to something that we were trying to speak to, around like the movement is, you know, why are we doing this? Are we doing this? Are we changing our relationship with land just for ourselves, so that we can raise kids and live in our, you know, happy little neighborhoods, and do some good ecological and cooperative work? or is this a movement that is something that serves on like a social movement sense? And in that sense, it needs to, all this work that we're doing needs to not just be these cool experiments that we're doing for us. We need to find a way to have this be more relevant to the larger movement of equity and systems change. So I think it's, you know, and I think that will be an interesting thing for us to talk about is this movement a movement, and are we causing systems change, and how?
Yeah, I can tag on another piece of that with the innovation piece. And I think there's two things that have been really impactful for me personally and has affected like all of my work, not just within the movement, but, you know, I work in the nonprofit sector, and I think there's ways that those influences show up there as well. And, you know, one of them is on the ecological front where, you know, and it's a little bit hard to talk about the movement as a whole because it's so diverse and the motivations, that kind of stuff that Cass was just talking about, vary really widely. But there are groups like Dancing Rabbit Eco Village, like Twin Oaks, and like the Boulder Co-op scene that have been studied and where we're actually seeing really significant reductions in ecological footprints and carbon footprints in those communities. And, you know, while Dancing Rabbit deliberately set out to do that, that wasn't necessarily the point of some of those other communities. And yet just cooperating and sharing and doing things collectively, you know, leads to a really significant reduction in resource use. And so I think there's that piece that I think is pioneering things that could be much more widely applied at a time when like we really need to be thinking about that. And I think there's ways that it can also suggest things for like, we could be making legal changes to make it easier to do a bunch of this stuff where things are really hard right now. So there's that part. The other part is, you know, the first big shift that I had was living in an income sharing community 26 years ago, and really getting how when an hour of labor and someone's life energy is valued equally with anybody else's hour of labor and life energy, that it has some pretty remarkable effects on gender relationships, actually, like how much like I got, how much, you know, economic structures can affect gender relationships from that early experience. And I think that suggests a lot of things. And, you know, at that time, you know, socialism was still a really dirty word in almost every political sphere. And that's changed now. And I think we know some things about patterns of how you can structure society based on what's been happening in some of those communities that I think can offer some really interesting models. And so for me, there's that, what's the export potential of some of the things that are happening in the communities movement that are actually really exciting? And people, you know, it's not just that potential, but it's also like, there's like hundreds and thousands of people around the country who are actually living into a different reality right now, economically, in terms of our land relationships and in terms of our ecological footprints, that are really concrete and allow us to sort of become different people in the process. And I think that is really exciting. That is really relevant. And there's a whole swath of the communities movement who could give a rat's ass about all of that stuff too. And I think we have to be real about like, there are different bubbles within the movement that are doing A, different pieces of that work, and B, are doing that work with, you know, greater and lesser degrees of seriousness and intentionality. But the groups that are doing it seriously and with intent are the groups that are really the most interesting to me.
Yeah, I think this kind of touches on something that I'm really curious about in this conversation, which is that there are a lot of issues that the communities movement is trying to tackle. And I mean, obviously on my podcast, I've talked to people about lots of different facets of community, but that we haven't even started to dive into some of these like more kind of topical. I mean, we're definitely topical, but more issues based as opposed to facets of community. So we can talk about governance, or we can talk about legal structure, we can talk about land ownership, but we haven't necessarily dove into class and privilege. We haven't dealt with gender equity and some of these other things that seem really at the forefront of what a lot of what you're saying right now, Yana, around the issues that we could be dealing with. And I guess what my curiosity is around, you know, is it too much, really? Are we diffuse in our energy? Should we just try and tackle one thing and do one thing right? Or is it cool and good and beneficial for us to be trying to take on all of these different issues simultaneously? Is it overwhelming for people who are trying to start new communities? Are people who are trying to get a new community off the ground and just figuring out how to live peacefully together overwhelmed by the fact that, okay, not only do we need to try and figure that out, but now we're trying to answer all of these other really complex social issues? And I would just love to hear your thoughts on those questions.
I think one of the things that comes up for me around that is that intentional communities, an intentional community as a model is sort of, it's inherently integrated. Like it's inherently trying to integrate lots of different aspects of life. And I think the degree to which we in our society understand the ways things are integrated has continued to sort of evolve over time. So, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, you know, in some circles, certainly, but in a more broader sense, like the connections between kind of economics and racism and climate and all these sort of things were not as sort of widely understood as I think they are now. Again, I don't want to discredit people in different eras who very much were on that page and touting that. But like as a society as a whole, I think we're getting that in a deeper way at this point. And so I think part of the question then is, okay, well, you know, the way I see it is that, you know, intentional communities have always been the sort of iterative process of responding to the problems of society. And that has evolved over the last 80 years since there were things that were calling themselves intentional communities in different ways. And so what moment are we in now? What moment of time with the problems we're facing and the sort of the severity of it and the integrated nature of those problems and our recognition of that, how do we design that in to our communities so that it's not like we're trying to do this and we're trying to do this and we're trying to do this, but we're really trying to get at like, what are those sort of underlying systemic fundamental sorts of things that we can be designing around that can affect all of it? And like, so for example, you know, one of the things that I think I've been advocating for a while, particularly in regards to the sort of upsurge in communities' desires to address race, is that, you know, there's the race, but there's a whole variety of different forms of oppression and vectors of diversity. And, you know, and any group, no matter how homogenous they might seem, there's still going to be some amount of diversity that's there. And one of the pitfalls I think I see groups getting into is like, how do we deal with racism? And I'm kind of like, why don't you just start with the diversity that you have? Like whatever is there, like foster your ability to embrace that and make space for that and then go from there. And part of that I think has a lot to do with like, are you able to change? And are you able to have conversations? Are you able to be open and talk about things? Are you able to do the kind of culture change work on some fundamental level that Yana is talking about? Because then that can apply to all sorts of different things. So looking for like, what are those sort of underlying things that we can be, you know, the underlying design principles that we can be finding that can help address all of it?
Yeah, Sky, and it makes me think of the, like I talk a lot about the early and often principle with conflict resolution that I think sometimes groups think about conflict resolution or anti-oppression work as being like, okay, we're going to address the really big, sticky, most terrible things. And the reality is that little tensions are happening all the time. And whether that's through an oppression lens or just an interpersonal conflict lens, and, you know, getting groups used to like practice when it's small, practice the first time somebody like irritates the hell out of you in a meeting or does a microaggression, and like get used to naming these sticky things, because part of what you're doing collectively is building some muscle so that when those big things do happen and when you get to a point of like, okay, now let's actually start thinking about like systemic oppression and like how we restructure things so that it, you know, we're not participating in those systems anymore, you actually have a sense of like, well, how do we talk about stuff that is really uncomfortable to talk about and where people are going to have defensiveness come up and whatnot. And so, you know, I think there are, I think that that microcosm, macrocosm thing also, you know, applies to like, you know, dealing with things when they show up in those small ways. And I think that's some of the practical advice. And I also think it helps to have a power analysis and to have some kind of an oppression analysis that you, you know, you're trying to put it inside a framework so that it's not just this overwhelming sea of things, but it's like, oh, so here's these patterns. And I think it can be easier. And a lot of groups, I think, are really reluctant to do that kind of power analysis work. But I think it's increasingly important that they have a sense of like, how do we fit into the world in terms of power structures? And where are we resisting? And where can we not yet resist because we're still participating in those things?
And I think that people get into community thinking that they're going to transcend certain elements of the culture that they're wishing to depart or create an alternative from, and then not realizing or being humble to the extent to which they're still embodying internalized power dynamics that are coming from the dominant cultural paradigm. And then I think that's really where it gets tricky, because you have people who think that they're doing something better or beyond or creative or aspirational, and then not knowing how to do the work of examining their unexamined shadow that they're bringing into the community. And I don't think there's any way in it, that we're not doing some degree of the world's work at home when we design a, you know, a substructure of it, and we put ourselves into cooperative self-governance, like it's going to come up. The work is there. And I think how we go about, like, one of our biggest challenges is the idealism and that comes with intentional community, and the idealism that we're going to create something that is going to be so much better and so different and so awesome. And then the reality, the humility of, oh my gosh, I'm repeating internalized colonial patterns like right here. And it's so humbling. And so I feel like if we were to approach the work of living in land-based community with an attitude of, oh, I am going to get my ass kicked. I am going to become initiated in ways that I can't even see. Then we might actually have a greater chance of being, quote, successful at our endeavor. And so I think that's one piece, is like where we're, what we expect, and then the reality of it.
Yeah, I think there's like some built-in humility if you're willing to embrace it, of like, you know, how do you like practice anti-colonialism on stolen land in a movement that is fundamentally land-based? And if you just like sit with that as a meditation for a little while, it will become obvious that like, so we are just a walking contradiction basically as a movement. And I think there's, you know, those of us in the movement who are caring about those topics and are starting to unpack it, I think it's I think that's a really big slice of humble pie. And I think like accepting that and not letting it stop you from being active in the world and stop you from trying to change things and still create something better. I think if you really embrace that work, you're setting yourself up for a lifetime of like weird discomfort and constantly bumping into layers of it and going like, oh, there it is again. Mm-hmm. And there it is again.
Yeah.
You know, over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key sort of like challenges that I feel like I've been like thinking into a lot lately is around our relationship to institutions and the way in which we are enculturated and our relationships socialized by mainstream institutions. And basically none of it is good. Like, you know, mainstream institutions are teaching just a whole array of dysfunctional relationships. Either you're learning how to be the authority in that system, you're learning just how to sort of like try to navigate and get around your being disempowered or even victimized, you know, by institutions. And so then we're all bringing that, what we've learned from that, into these institutions of community that we've created. And I think a lot of times don't realize how we're then playing those out. I think part of this is like, there is this sort of central thing that, like, you know, mainstream doesn't teach us how to live in community, and it has sort of robbed us of our sense of community and our ability to live in community. And so which then makes living in community really hard. And so it is this sort of interesting, like Yana said, we're sort of these walking contradictions and paradoxes, where it's like the exact thing that is driving us to want to find community is the thing that then makes it really hard to live in community once we get there. And I think ultimately, you know, part of this is like relearning how to be part of something, you know, relearning how to not, you know, be the authority in or the victim of or whatever, but like really actually be part of something. What does that mean? And being able to come together and actually talk about these things and work through them together.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm hearing in this, you know, the question that comes up for me is, well, what does success look like? What does it feel like? And one of the answers that I'm hearing in what you're sharing is that there's a level of success is uncomfortable. You know, that there's an aspect of doing a good job, whatever that might mean, as communitarians, at least in this current era where we're moving out of, my God, I hope we're moving out of a lot of toxic paradigms and hopefully moving towards something else. But in order to do that, you know, we're still swimming in the same water. Like, we can't quite shake off the shackles of thousands of years of oppressive dynamics. And so we're doing the best we can. And what that means is just being okay with being uncomfortable and looking at things that are going to make us feel a little squeamish sometimes and call our own motivations and our own actions into question. Yeah, there's something really, I don't know. It's like, how do you make that appealing for people? Like, okay, when we're doing a great job, everybody's going to feel weird.
Yeah, I think this goes back to something that Cass was saying a few minutes ago for me. It's like, what's your motivation? Like, if you're coming in it to feel good, I don't think that's actually a motivation that's going to last. I think that is going to evaporate very quickly. If you're coming into it because you want the word founder next to your name on your resume, that is not going to cut it. I mean, you have to be doing it because you care deeply about the state of the world, and you're going to find your satisfaction in things that aren't about success, but they're about belonging. And, you know, that they're about like getting to the place of enough humility that when you discover that the thing that you've created is actually toxic, you can let it go and learn from that rather than doubling down on it. And so like the word success actually throws me for a little bit of a loop. I'm like, I don't even know what that word means anymore. Like, I feel like it's the wrong box to be trying to put this in. I think for me, the thing that I've been learning from working more and more deeply with BIPOC women over the last few years is that like belonging to me has become like actually the North Star much more than almost anything else. And, you know, and it is, like, true belonging is transformative. And so it gets at a whole bunch of those things that I think we've been reaching for in like more linear ways, but it's got a really different feel to it. And I would love to hear what Cass and Sky think about like what does success mean in your minds? And is that even what we should be reaching for? Like, I don't even know anymore in some ways.
Yeah, I'm really with you in questioning our ideas of of success. And I guess I also want to weave in something that Rebecca was saying earlier of like, is it too much? You know, there's so much that needs to be done on a systemic level. Like if you could just figure out, you know, how to have an equitable and accessible financial model in your community, then that would be amazing. If you could figure out how to legally hold title of land over time in a succession of phases of your community, that would be amazing. If you could have a culture that knew how to be humble, to learn together, to be responsive and adaptive to an ever-changing, uncertain world, and like knew how to digest conflict as learning and deepening, that would be amazing. There is so much for us to do. And then we set out to do it, those of us with the privilege, the time, the resources, the friends who can join us, we set out to do that. And then a lot of us are working full-time jobs on top of also trying to do all of that and put in the solar
and raise kids
and raise kids and compost and build soil and restore the waters and build relationships with our neighbors. I mean, it's too much in so many ways. And then I know I put on export potential. Then we also need to be doing something culturally relevant that isn't just about us in our little mostly white neighborhood. Like, that's not okay. That's not enough. So it is too much. And I think that there is a humility that I know I'm reckoning with that is that's like, how do we gather? Like, what is enough? And because then I feel like in that too muchness, I'm then becoming part of the problem. I'm grasping and controlling and trying to get us there and, you know, and doing these things that I don't actually want to be doing. And so how do I then have what we can do be enough and have the, and then going back to the piece of what is a person's motivation? Like, if your motivation is to control all of these interlocking variables and create another utopian model for society, good luck. That's pretty, talk about setting yourself up for, in some ways, failure. But if you're like, okay, we're going to do our best and we're going to try to actually heal our own nervous systems enough that we can be a contribution to our own children, our neighbors, our community, the water, like what is enough? And how do we go about doing that in a way that is, that's a learning path and is like, this whole thing, like we're trying to tackle issues that are multi-generational behind us. They're going to take some time. And so what part of it can we help turn the dial in the great turning that is actually not extractive from our own bodies, the land, and our children? Like, how can we do this in a way that is full of a humble learning that is then in solidarity with other movements?
In the coming months, as I'm taking a little break from this podcast, I have a feeling you might be jonesing for more information, more insights, more tips on how to do this thing called community. Well, you can definitely re-listen to some of my past episodes, or you could check out Communities Magazine. A printed copy of the magazine will slip easily into your beach bag, and you can take it with you as you relax in the sun on your own summer vacation. If you don't want to wait for the printed copy to come, you can go online right now and access a digital subscription, which you can read on your phone or on your computer. You can check out hundreds of articles written by experts and new and old communitarians recounting their experience and their wisdom from their collaborative culture journey. For more information, visit gen-us.net/communities. The Inside Community podcast has been so many things for me. It has been a learning curve and a growth edge. It's been a deep exploration. It's been a lot of fun, and it's been a true labor of love. I'm so grateful to you for being along for this journey. I'm also super grateful to the Foundation for Intentional Community, the show's sponsor, for really believing in my vision for this endeavor and helping me to promote it, holding down a lot of the back end and connecting me with amazing people to interview and talk to so that we can provide the best content. The FIC and I both need the support of people like you to keep creating useful content like this. If you feel inspired by what you've heard, if you've enjoyed it, and if you just want to pitch in or have some extra ice cream money lying around this summer, I hope you'll consider visiting ic.org/podcast to make a donation. It'll help me continue doing this work. It'll help the FIC to keep sponsoring this project and other projects like this. Thank you so much for your generosity, and we hope you have a great summer.
Well, I'm thinking about one of the pieces that when the three of us talked recently that we got into was this whole not knowing, and this whole thing about, like, you know, being willing to be in that sort of like humble place of like, we don't really know. And I've been bouncing that one around in my head because of the extent to which I think, you know, all three of us are people who are looked to at times as experts. And I was like, okay, you know, but if we're just saying like, well, I don't know, you know, there's something that's also a little disingenuous. And so I was trying to like sort out, well, what's the distinction here? And I was like, well, we do know a lot about what's been done. Like that we know a ton about. And that, you know, maybe we are experts on, and we can speak very much to what have intentional communities been doing. You know, what are the challenges? What are the successes? What are the pitfalls? What are the different models? Like all these different things. What are all the stories, the anecdotes, the like different things that we could point to? Like, yes, we have lots. There's so much that is known. But then it gets back to that question of like, well, what are we actually going for here? And is what's been done actually getting us where we are trying to go? And in that, it's like, well, no. Like, have we affected a global revolution yet? Well, no, we haven't. So on some level, like, how do we do that? We don't know. You know, but and I think that gets into what Cassandra is saying is like, well, you know, we take the pieces that we can. And I think part of it is that we just keep bringing as deep an analysis as possible. Like we keep bringing, as Yana keeps pointing to, that sort of that power analysis, you know, our understanding of privilege, the responsibilities that we have to as people with privilege or to whatever extent we have privilege, leveraging that privilege for others as well. You know, we keep bringing that perspective. We keep checking ourselves. We keep checking each other, and just keep asking these questions about, you know, what can we do, you know, and I think asking them in ways that maybe we haven't before, like, you know, like, are we, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that I see so much is, you know, I think. You know, leftists love to create these lofty vision statements about the world that we want to create. And it's like, have we really thought about like, what would it actually take to create that? And so just being in a more deep inquiry around that from these different perspectives of power and privilege. And then also like not martyring ourselves, as Cass was saying, like, it's like, yeah, we have to take care of ourselves. And I think back to what you're saying, Rebecca, it's like, yeah, if this is just seen, if it's just drudgery and martyrdom and, you know, all that, it's like, yeah, that's not going to work either. Like there is a way in which it has to be enjoyable. And I think that this is part of it is like, you get into it and you start to be like, it is enjoyable. Like it is worth it. Like even all the hard stuff, you get to that place. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think I've thought about, like with particularly with work around racism, is like, you know, you start to get comfortable being uncomfortable, and you start to get uncomfortable being comfortable. Like when you recognize that you're in a comfortable position, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like if I'm comfortable right now, that probably means it's costing someone else something.
Right.
And so what do I do about that?
Yeah. I realize, like, I think that in this conversation, we might be more appropriately talking to people who are already in the movement than folks who, like, I don't think that this is going to be the branding conversation that, like, inspires a bunch of people to, like, get involved. But I think that this is, like, you know, we're people who take this stuff really seriously and are deep in, and we want more people who are deep in to be thinking about this stuff more strongly. And one of the things that Sky talked about in the conversation we'd had earlier, as we were sort of, do we even have a conversation here that's worth recording, was this idea that, like, we're sort of living in a time of late stage capitalism and climate change and rising fascism. And that's really hard. Like everybody is having a really hard time right now who has any kind of awareness, whether you're in the communities movement or not. And, like, how difficult it is to be able to, like, get something new off the ground when, like, you can barely pay your bills and you don't have healthcare and all that kind of stuff. And that, you know, I think part of what I want to do with this conversation is just to, like, validate for people, like, if you've been, like, still putting on a front of, like, I'm okay, like, it's really okay to not be okay right now. And that I think that's one of the things that needs to happen in this moment. I don't know where that leads us, but I know that it leads us into deeper authenticity and the potential for deeper belonging with each other. And that is a really core human need that has driven people to create community for centuries. And this is a really important moment for us to do that. So to lean into that in a really real way, I do think that gets you to a better place. And, like, no, you're not going to be, like, smiling all the time and, like, super happy. And, like, it's not fun, but there's really deep satisfaction in, like, dropping away all of that pretense that we're all okay right now and turning toward each other in that moment in our sort of, like, shared struggle and pain. I think that's a really important, I think that is part of the answer. And I don't know what it is. Like, I can tell you how to set up a membership structure. I can tell you how to not fuck up consensus completely. All of that stuff is the stuff that Sky's saying. It's like, we shouldn't pretend that we don't know. Like, we do know a lot. That is absolutely true. And one of the things that I'm increasingly knowing is that if we're not acting as if we're in uncharted territory right now, we're getting behind the times. And so I think it's important. So this, like, my part of this interview is sort of a call to other people who are starting to be looked at. I mean, we're sort of in that next generation of people who are starting to be looked at as leaders of this movement. And we can't just get on our pedestals and pretend. Like, that is not what this moment needs. It needs something much more humble and much more turning toward each other as people who are on a journey. Even if somebody's six steps behind me, we're on the same journey. And, like, really feeling that sense of, like, you know, fellowship, I think, you know, to go back to, like, you know, like, what used to be FIC's first word was fellowship. And there is something about that, like, we're on a journey together. And it's pretty epic and it's pretty hard right now.
You know, something I like about where you started with this, that line of thought there, Yana, was just kind of naming that this level of conversation about where the movement is going is, like, in my mind, it's like master's level. This is thesis work. Whereas I think for this podcast and for at least a portion of my listeners, a lot of it is kind of 101 level. Like, okay, what is governance? You know, that's a beginning step. And I love that this conversation is going to kind of cap this first season with the bigger picture and the slightly more advanced concepts. And, you know, you brought up the FIC. I know, you know, we're all connected to the FIC. And we've talked about in this conversation, you know, the goals and where is this movement going and, you know, who's defining these structures and who are we as a movement? Do you feel that the FIC is the sort of governing body of the communities movement? Do you feel that there's a need for a greater, I don't know, conference or consortium of some sort of the communities movement to come together and maybe put some, I don't know, have some World Cafe kind of conversations and talk about these things and be a more united movement? Or is it okay that it's a little, that it's somewhat piecemeal and that different people are doing different things in different places?
I mean, again, there's a degree to which it's what are we going for? Is it okay? Yeah, sure. There's nothing wrong necessarily. But what are we going for? And I think one of the things that I both, you know, understand on a deep level and find frustrating is the insularity that communities tend to get into and the lack of mutual support and coordination amongst communities. Not that it's not existent, but it is just so much less than it could be. And, you know, I get in conversations occasionally with people, you know, where we start to identify, like, what are some of the kinds of things that are possible, either because we've seen small examples of them or just because we can dream into it. So, like, I mean, things like, you know, coordinated fundraising amongst the movement in order to be able to start more communities and support more communities, you know, better documentation of what communities are doing and sharing amongst each other so that communities aren't just struggling on their own with things that lots of other communities are struggling with as well. You know, things like mutual insurance programs, you know, coordinated efforts to change policy to make it easier for communities to start. Something we've talked about in the past, like a national scale community land trust that could actually hold land for communities in a more secure kind of way. You know, there's just all sorts of different sorts of things that if we were able to come together and be more coordinated as a movement, like the kinds of things that are possible are you know, beyond what we can see right now. So, you know, that's where I would like to go. I don't know that FIC is necessarily like the body to be the coordinating or governing body for some whole thing like that. Maybe it could be, or maybe some whole other thing is needed. And maybe something that kind of defines, like, kind of as we've been talking about, maybe it actually isn't the whole movement as we have sort of understood it. Maybe there is more of a subset of the movement that is better positioned to come together for that sort of thing, and something new needs to be created. I don't know, you know, but this is definitely a place where I'm like, I can see the potential there, but I don't know. I don't know how to actually get there.
The three of us have had some conversations for sure over the years about what is the appropriate role of the FIC in the movement? And do we play more of a neutral role and be responsive to, you know, what other folks might just want in terms of a listing service or, you know, just something that's less what we called prescriptive. And you know, over the years that the three of us were together, either, you know, with roles in the organization, we over and over again came to that we needed to provide some leadership with regard to the work of the anti-oppression work that we saw and the revealing of the unexamined white supremacy culture that was inside of the movement, and that we weren't ethically willing to be involved and not discuss that and not have that be something that we were as stewards, that we felt that needed to be brought to the surface. And so during our time of working together, some, I think, important pieces did come into being through that focus. And it leads me to this feeling that that I wish that intentional communities were more had more eldership, had more, in a sense, it's an interesting word, but it comes to me, supervision, for lack of a better word. You know, Sky came in and lived in our community for 4 months and did their deep under the hood experience. And it was the, it was, we're for years, we're going to live into what Sky saw when they looked under the hood of Landwell. And how do we normalize the need for a wisdom council, for elders, for people who, and who are willing to decompose the power structure. So it's less about, oh, we're answering to people in a hierarchical way, but we're actually being held by elder wisdom that then is like supporting us rather than telling us what to do. And so I think that's part of the cultural change work of seeing supervision is not something that is on top of you telling you what to do, but is actually like looking deeply with you at the undercurrent issues and being a resource as, you know, in the growth process that your community's in.
It's interesting. I find myself longing for like three sort of different points along those lines. I mean, one of them is the sort of like, you know, elderhood and the like deep wisdom. One of it though, you know, there was this thing that went around social media a while ago of like, if you don't have a mentor who's under 30, mm-hmm. you're getting behind. Yes. And there is something to me about like turning to young people as well who have different stakes in what's happening in the world right now. I mean, I'm 52, I'm going to be dead at the point that some of this stuff plays out. And my kids aren't going to be. And that colors things really differently. Like we saw in the court system that like we started seeing climate change be a reasonable defense in the legal system when judges started being old enough that they were going to live with the impact of it. And I think that there is something about, you know, that. So there's, to me, there's like the elderhood and then there's the youth. But there's also this really sticky and I think controversial thing that I want to say is that I have often wished that we had some sort of a professional ethics board within the communities movement, because there are absolutely shitty things that have been done in, you know, when somebody's been in the consulting and training role that has done deep damage to communities, and there is nowhere to take that. And that is a little bit of a hierarchy. And it is a little bit of like, I do wish that there was some place where you could take something where there would be some serious accountability. And we don't have that. I mean, we're very much in like what, you know, in my culture work, I would call the like counterculture column that doesn't like accountability and doesn't like hierarchy and, you know, will martyr ourselves and all that kind of stuff. And so one of the cultural shifts I find myself deeply longing sometimes for something that would be like, there's no place where the buck stops.
That's right.
In the movement. Mm-hmm. And that has, I think, allowed abuses to sometimes proliferate in the movement in a way that I don't know what to do with. And I've been on cleanup mode enough times at this point that I wish for something with a little bit of authority. And I don't think that's necessarily the FIC. In terms of like, is FIC like a governing body? Like we're not, we're a networking organization. And there are things missing because FIC is kind of the most visible player and we're a network and don't really have any authority in the movement. And so, and I don't know what that adds up to, but I do find myself sort of longing for those sort of three really different pieces that I think together would really add up to deep wisdom and deeper potential for like real systemic change in the movement.
Yeah. Kind of weaving both of what you both said together. I mean, that one of the things that I know from my experience, particularly as executive director and different times is people reaching out to the FIC when bad stuff is happening at a community. Like they've experienced bad stuff, and sometimes it's sexual abuse or misconduct. Sometimes it's power stuff. Like sometimes it's financial manipulation. But like, you know, people will reach out to us sometimes and say like, hey, there's bad things happening at this community, and you know, ultimately, the only thing that we can do is we can take their listing in the directory down. Like, that's it. Like, the FIC has no authority beyond that. But it is interesting to see how groups, you know, how people do reach out to us, because the FIC is the only place to go. Like, there's no one else that even approaches that sense of like an authority or governing body or something that could do something about when bad shit happens in communities. And it happens. And it is definitely something that's kept me up at night in terms of this movement. And like, we know bad shit is happening in communities out there. And there's not a whole lot we can do about that. And that doesn't feel right.
I mean, what would a governing body even look like? You know, what would like, one of the questions that I was thinking to kind of like would be more towards the end of this, but you know, how do you incentivize better leadership? I mean, obviously there's people, and Cassandra kind of touched on this earlier, who have the privilege of the bandwidth and the space to give more to this movement. But for most people, I think most people that I meet, like just living in community is big. It's a lot. It's a huge amount of time and energy, not to mention having jobs and families on top of that. So, you know, how do we start to, you know, what would that even look like, I guess, is my question.
That is the $10 million question that I do not have an answer to, but I think it would be worth a conversation at some point. And I don't, you know, and I don't even know who convenes that conversation, who decides who gets invited into that conversation. I mean, those are all big, important questions, and I don't really know what that would look like, but I do think it's interesting that it's a need that I feel like has cropped up like over the, I mean, I've been involved with FIC now for 21 years, and I feel like this pops up every once in a while. It sort of rises and then goes away and then rises and goes away. And at some point it's going to rise up and it's going to be the thing that we actually ought to be picking up. But I don't have a picture for what that would look like. I think that would be something we'd have to create, you know, as a movement. And in order to do that, I think we'd have to see ourselves as a movement. And I don't know that we do.
Yeah, I think it's spotty. I think there are elements, there are pockets, there are people who do see it as a movement or see the potential of it as a movement. And then there's lots that don't necessarily. But I think, you know, seeing ourselves as a movement in a broader way, or like more people, more communities seeing themselves as part of a movement is kind of a prerequisite for it actually being a movement. I think the question of governing body is, you know, it's a little, you know, I think where we start is kind of along the lines of what I was talking about before, about like, what are actual practical, beneficial things that communities could do together? And I think finding some things like that to kind of help work though that ability to really come together as a community of communities and as a movement. And just the needs for organizing around larger coordinated efforts like that, I think that will help guide us towards what would the evolution of that be. But I'm very much in favor of like, you know, let's start practically, start with, you know, what makes sense given what's actually happening, as opposed to looking too far into the future and imagining what, you know, something might look like. I think communities get ahead of themselves a lot. I think in a lot of intentional communities sort of like kind of try to prefigure what they should be doing too much, as opposed to just kind of do what they're doing, be in it in the moment and evolve over time. And again, it kind of gets into that, like one of the issues I see communities facing is like they set up a bunch of structures and then it becomes rigid and they don't know how to change. They don't know how to adapt mm-hmm. with changing circumstances over time. And so I think, again, as a movement, that's what we need to be able to do too. And so I think part of that is just, you know, where do we start? Where are some of the places we can start? And, you know, again, lots of ideas, but sort of there's sort of the question of how. There's still that question of how.
Can I just say right now that this is a movement and just name it, that this is a movement? Like we don't need to wait for someone else to decide if this is a movement. Like, I hereby, the power vested in me by myself as a podcaster, witnessed by you three community leaders, name this communities as a movement. You know, there's like, it is like, it's a thing that's happening. It might not be as cohesive as we might want, but for me, my mind just goes to, okay, well, how do we cohese? Like, that's the next step. Do we need a conference? Do we need a symposium, a time that we come together and spend 3 or 4 days on a piece of land somewhere and ask and start answering some of these questions and generate the manifesto and create a work order? And like, my brain is very kind of, here's the problem. How do we solve it? Like, let's move into that, you know? And I don't know, maybe that's lofty and hopefully I'm not like raising my hand too much for what I actually have the bandwidth to do. But I mean, I feel like it's right here, you know, and that there are people across the country who are very interested in these things. Even the people who are coming to this, you know, listening to this podcast as complete novices, and maybe this is the first time they're even thinking about some of these issues. But most people who are thinking about community as a lifestyle, as a change, are thinking about it because on some level they're tuned to exactly these issues. I don't meet too many people who are interested in community because it's cute or like because it's, you know, like they might be interested in the food, but you know, there's usually something a little bit deeper there in the connection space that people are striving for. So,
yeah, I think the challenging part is like, I think that we're a movement in the sense of we're a phenomenon that is happening and that there are similar things happening in a lot of places. I don't think we're a movement in terms of being an organized entity that is leveraging power in the world. And that's what's missing. Like, it's not that there isn't a describable thing going on, but it's like, how do we actually make change deliberately where we are putting our shoulders into the same direction with that? And I think that FIC has been, you know, skirting that line for a long time of like, do we, you know, it's that thing of like, are you descriptive or prescriptive? And, you know, are you advocating or are you just, you know, passively responding to requests? And those are two really different things. And like, most people in the communities movement don't think like organizers, don't think like political organizers. And I think that's like the difference. And so I go back and forth between whether I think this is a movement or not. I think it depends on which one of those definitions you're looking at. And we're absolutely a movement on the one level. I think the world would benefit immensely from us being a movement on the other level. And that's the part that I don't know that we have the will and the resources and the bandwidth to actually, you know, lean into that second definition of it.
And also, like you said earlier, Yana, because we're walking contradictions, we would be a movement that named that by necessity. Otherwise, we would be all like, you could poke so many holes in it. And so it's like we'd have to say, yeah, we know that we have a lot of work to do. Yeah, we know that we're humble to it, and we're committed to what kind of change and that integrated, like Sky was saying earlier, this is by like intentional community is necessarily integrating. And you know, to your question, Rebecca, like, should we just take on one part of it? I think our power and in some ways our vulnerability is in that wholeness of it, that bringing on the development of whole people in whole systems, inside of cultural systems and ecological systems. Like, it's a lot. So to be able to name that putting your life, sometimes I used to think of us as lifestyle activists, you know, like I'm just bringing my kids, all my finances, my whole life, my pattern, everything is in the activism of building a new way of cooperative stewardship. But it's so much. And so how do we name that? And what would be the coherence? Like, would you have people who are in market rate co-housing, like with income sharing communities, saying that they're in the same movement? So then, like, would we then water down, like, oh, well, we share things and that's what we do? Or, like, what is the movement? Are we all committed to a degree of dismantling classism? Is that part of our movement? Are we all committed to dismantling private property ownership? Are we and sharing earth and in our places? Like, what are we all committed to? And so that, I think it's a conundrum. And I like, Yana, you said that we're a phenomenon. And I respect where you're coming from, Rebecca, too. I'm like, there's been so many times I'm like, it's a movement. And I'm like, but is it? And you certainly can't compare it to Black Lives Matter, you know, and, or some of the movement towards climate justice, you know. It's like, there's movements.
It's like we're a container that a bunch of those movements are intersecting with. And there's a few balls from each one of those movements in our container.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call that though.
I mean, I don't know. I think there's a piece of it for me in all these conversations that I've had over the last few months that sees that, you know, everyone, it's all a spectrum. It's not you're either in or you're out. For me, it's not you're either in or you're out. Mm-hmm. I think the benefit, the joy, the excitement for me of the communities movement, which I do believe is actually a movement, is that, and how the FIC holds it, to like kind of toot their horn a little bit, is that they really make space for the spectrum. And that not everybody can jump in at an egalitarian, like, let's give up property ownership level. Like, that's actually master's level work that you don't get to in year one or two, or maybe even in this lifetime. That's actually an I don't want to use the word evolution, but it's actually a transformation of consciousness that needs to happen in order for people to operate at that level. And not everybody's there, quite frankly. But can we, as the container for this movement, make space for people to enter at the co-housing level and just start working on how to be nicer to people, how to live better, how to resolve conflict, how to recycle, for crying out loud? You know, is there space for that? As well as on the other end, people who are leading thought, leading healing, really, cultural and social healing. I hope so.
I mean, you know, on some level, it gets back to that question about, like, what are intentional communities about? And, you know, there is a degree to which, like, of course we are creating them and living in them because they're good places for us. Like, there is absolutely, totally appropriately a selfish element of, like, this is how I want to live. Like, I think this is better for me. This is going to be a happier, healthier, more satisfying existence for me. And then I also want to have that be available for other people as well. And I want to have that be a model that can help impact society. And one of the things that I often come back to is back in the 1940s, when people were getting together and creating the first things that they called intentional communities. One of the people back then wrote in an article that part of what they were about as intentional communities, and what they meant by that was they were coming together in their common commitment to help build the foundations for a more humane and equitable global society. Like this is in like 1940s, like that's what intentional community was about. So, you know, what does that mean? How do we get there? You know, and I think this is a place then where like, yeah, I think there's going to have to be a variety of different strategies and we can't, it doesn't, we don't necessarily need to all be all together in everything all the time. I think this is one of these sort of like ways in which some misinterpretations of some stuff around inclusion and that sort of thing that we sometimes get into. But one of the things that I think, you know, I mean, like, for example, like with policy stuff, somebody reached out to me recently. It's like, hey, is FIC working on policy stuff? And I was like, well, we've sort of tried to track it in the past, but not really, in part because it's mostly happening on state and local levels and we're a national organization. But then there's also the fact that, like, you know, what a community that is trying to be an eco-village is going to want on a policy level is different from the kinds of policy things that would make co-housing community easier as opposed to, you know, this, that, and the other. So it's a little hard for us to all figure out how to, you know, how to bring them all together. But maybe they don't have to, you know, and I think that's a place where, you know, and again, other sort of ways that I've thought about it is like there's the FIC, which is very big tent umbrella, like trying to be as inclusive as possible. And then my background at Twin Oaks, and Twin Oaks being part of the organization called the Federation of Egalitarian Communities, which historically has been a very small, like generally not more than a dozen or so communities that are committed more to income sharing and participatory governance and, you know, some very, very sort of more push things that are pushing the edge a little bit more. And, you know, and that's where like they have created a mutual insurance program that acts as a loan fund, and they are able to do sort of coordinated outreach and different sorts of things. There is a bunch of stuff possible that has been possible that network has done of real practical benefit to the communities in those networks. And so I've often thought, you know, and this is where, Rebecca, I'm totally with you. Like I totally feel like there's a manifesto to be written here of something that is maybe, or maybe a number of different things that are somewhere between what the FIC is doing and what the FEC has been of, you know, can we find, you know, maybe not the whole big tent, but some smaller tents where communities who are aligned around certain things can come together and find actual practical benefit in that. So that, you know, part of the pitfall is like, it's like, oh, it's another monthly meeting and another email list to be on, you know, but like, can we actually like have it be something that is of real benefit that comes out of alignment around vision and values that is, again, not as big tent as FIC has tried to be, but also not as small tent as FEC has tried to be.
You know, it's interesting, Sky, when I hear you say that, what I go to is, you know, as I've gotten deeper into anti-racism work, one of the things that is a refrain that I've heard a lot is that, and also in the disability justice world, this idea that like, if you lean into the kinds of policies in the world that would serve the most vulnerable and the most radically in need people, everybody else is going to benefit from that as well. And so and that's different, I think, than what you just described. I mean, I think that would mean you advocate for policies that radical eco-villages and income sharing groups are like, that would make their lives easy and their community building efforts easy. And then, you know, the co-housing world is going to get pulled along with that, and it's going to get easier for them as well. But focusing on like what co-housing needs is not going to actually get us significant world improvement, I think. And so I just wonder, like, I think that would be one of the really interesting debates for us to get into at some point is like, which, it's a theory of change question, I think. Like, you know, are you leaning into what's going to be like the most deeply radically beneficial to the world and is also going to be led then by those communities who have had the biggest struggle and the largest amount of barriers to doing the kind of community that they want to have? Or do you try to keep it big tent enough that like the co-housing people are comfortable with what's happening in the room? And I think that's a really big question, and they're two really different tactics. And so if we were going to look at something like legal reform stuff, I think that's kind of the first question. Is whose thinking and needs are leading that process, and are like the thing that we go back to, like whose needs are the North Star in the conversation? And I think that's, and you know, and FIC has had that dance over the years. I mean, I feel like we've danced, and we've moved slowly toward, we're going to start advocating and start trying to be a thought leader rather than just a sort of passive responder, which I think is what we were for a very long time. The first decade that I was involved with FIC, that was basically what we were doing. And then that slowly started to shift over time. So I would love to have, and that's a whole other conversation that we're not going to have right now, but I would love to have that conversation at some point about, like, so what's the center of gravity in terms of how we want to think about things like reform?
Okay. I'm really liking where this is going. So, and this piece that you said, Rebecca, about a spectrum, and then with what Yana, you know, is saying about, like, well, let's put those folks whose needs have been the most systemically marginalized, like, at the front of that spectrum of reform and policy change. And then it actually gives some of the other communities who are like, we're doing a good thing over here, but we actually don't know how to serve that movement. If they saw themselves as part of a transitional ecosystem that was all moving mm-hmm. together, but like the leadership was in the equity building space, then that would allow not just the more conventional communities to follow, but actually to be part of something, to feel like, okay, yeah, I'm aligned with that. Even if my community doesn't express those values as radically, they might be able to contribute, you know, not only their own learning and attention, but also resources to the other end of that spectrum. And so I'm liking this idea, because it then, like you all said, we're belonging to something. It's not like, oh, you're not radical enough because you're not sharing enough, you're not breaking down the system enough, or, you know, whatever. Like, you're just, there's another part of the spectrum, and that's okay. That's where you're at. Maybe you live in that community and then you're out there doing like incredible legal reform work over there, or you're, you know, there's other ways of that we constellate and our activism besides where we live. So I think that that's and that connects us to other movements, which is another thing that we've been struggling to cohere with, or, you know, being in that, is that there's a lot of incredible work that's being done in this quote movement that isn't just being done in communities of place. And how do we partner with those movements as well? Like the New Economy Coalition and, you know, yeah.
I would love to put like a nice bow on this whole thing, but I don't know that that's even possible. I guess I'd just like to ask each of you, sort of in closing, you know, as we talk about the state of the communities movement, just for you, you know, for you, for your activism, where do you feel like your next steps are? You know, where do you feel like your next move is to support this movement? And hopefully my listeners, our listeners, can take some inspiration from your guidance.
Well, my answer is easy and very concrete, which is I have a new book coming out this fall on starting communities, which has little hints and threads of some of the stuff that we've been talking about, but isn't really the sort of masterclass thing if we're thinking of this conversation as that. So, you know, despite all of the challenges, I think the world benefits from having more and more communities forming out there and being wherever we are in these struggles that we've been talking about. And so what I want to do is support people who want community, making fewer mistakes on the way and getting a more satisfying and more like deeply inclusive sense of belonging in those communities. So that's, have my writer's hat on again, and soon there will be something coming out as a result of that.
You'll definitely find me in the land justice movement. And I am currently co-founding an organization, a nonprofit organization called the Center for Ethical Land Transition. And we're doing solidarity and justice work to help create other pathways for land to transition into the hands of those who have been systemically dispossessed. And so it's healing work, it's cultural and social change work, and it's hopefully will help influence, we'll be doing a training program for real estate agents as well who want to be involved in that, in reparative land transitions. And so that's got a lot of my attention. I'm really hoping that that serves the larger intentional communities movement in terms of the edge work that we're doing around what entities are, and these movements are being led by Native communities, BIPOC groups, farm workers, you know, like people that that are being supported right now in creating culturally appropriate legal entities to hold title to land and to cooperatively self-govern. And I'm hoping that we, in that spectrum, that, you know, that I could help thread together some of the learnings for intentional communities and retreat centers and other folks who are stewarding land about how to think about how we're doing that in a way that is increasing our accountability and our responsibility to helping heal history. So that's where you'll find me.
I think the big inquiry that I've been in comes from seeing the intentional communities movement over the last 80 years as this iterative process of developing new models to respond to the problems of the world. So the communities that were being founded in the 40s and 50s when intentional community was the first thing, and the problems that they were responding to then, and the models that resulted from that are different from then the kinds of communities that were being created in the 60s and 70s in the midst of the Vietnam War and Cultural Revolution and everything that was happening then. And then though those kinds of communities are very different then again from the kinds of communities in the 90s and into the 2000s that were being formed when eco-villages started being on the scene and co-housing and these sorts of things and the ways that they were responding to the problems that of those times. And so what is this moment calling for from intentional communities is sort of the big question. And what are the ways in which the problems that we're seeing now, the models as we understand them of intentional communities haven't really been designed. They weren't designed to deal with the problems that we're facing now, particularly this kind of trifecta that we've been talking about of capitalism, climate change, and trauma. And so how to do that? How do we update our designs for intentional community? And I think, you know, that both, and I think particularly that like being over the barrel of capitalism and the just increasingly scarce resources that we have to try and work with, along with the increasing prevalence of trauma in a whole variety of different forms. And so how do we contend with all of that? How do we design for this, what seems like an impossible set of problems to work with? And so for me, you know, trying to start a new community, to try to, you know, try out, experiment with some of these ideas about what the next iteration of intentional community might look like. Also doing consulting work with them, which I'm also starting to do in partnership with dear friend and colleague Avi Crooley. We're starting to work under the name The Next Big Step. And then again, you know, just continuing to be on the board of the FIC and do work there and, you know, and just kind of weave it all together, you know, and keep doing this kind of research work and being in conversation with people around the movement and instigating conversations. Because on some level, you know, all the different things that we've been talking about, whether it's within your own community and the movement as a whole, like it's so much about just, it's the conversation. Like, we just keep having the conversation, keep saying what's there, keep seeing what we're seeing, and, you know, let, you know, not think we know what the solutions are, but let them emerge through our conversations with each other.
Well, I am so, so grateful to each of you, Sky Blue, Cassandra Ferreira, Yana Ludwig. It's been a real pleasure, not just for this conversation, but for all of the conversations I know that you've been having over the years that have been sort of kind of, I just feel the energy of those conversations in the background, like sort of holding a frame. And I'm really grateful to you for all of that work. And I'm hoping that all of my listeners feel inspired to contribute to this conversation moving forward and to developing this movement, this whatever this thing might be, as we move forward into the future. So thank you, each of you, very much. Thank you so much for coming along on this first season of the Inside Community Podcast. I hope this final episode with Yana Ludwig, Sky Blue, and Cassandra Ferreira has touched you and inspired you to think about what you want to grow into as a communitarian. I'm going to have links for their work in the show notes, as well as a coupon code for the bookstore at the FIC. And you can check out Yana's books that she's already put out, as well as her new one that she has coming out soon. You know, it's been a real pleasure to craft this season for you, and I look forward to coming back next season with more insights and useful nuggets of information about collaborative culture and intentional community. During the break, you can continue to find me online at Facebook and Instagram at Inside Community Podcast. And of course, all of our shows are going to be available through ic.org/podcast and wherever you listen to podcasts. So please continue to rate and review and share with friends and keep this buzz going about communities and the communities movement. Thanks again for being a part of this with me, and have a wonderful, safe, happy summer.